Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. At the same time, you will hear about important events taking place around the world. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we hear about politics and financial dealings between France and Russia. It is a complicated story, so we urge you to listen carefully. Then, we will tell you about a call for justice in the Philippines that has gone unanswered for many years. As It is coming to you from VOA, Washington. Now, here is part one. The National Front in France has admitted taking a large loan from a bank controlled by Russia. National Front leader Marine Le Pen announced last week that her party had taken an $11 million loan from the first Czech Russian bank. She made the announcement during a visit to Moscow. Her admission came as the French government delayed an agreement to deliver two warships for Russia. To explain what this all means, we turn to Mario Ritter.
The French president's office said the situation in Ukraine did not permit delivery of the warships, which carry helicopters. The ships are being built in the port of Saint-Nazaire. The National Front has campaigned hard for the warship agreement to be completed. The party's Gauthier Boucher spoke to VOA in October.
Our position is to protect our industry, to protect our right to trade with every country that we want.
The National Front has attracted thousands of people in French towns and cities. Opinion studies show it is the country's most popular party. Neil Barnett is with the Center for Policy Studies in London. He says supporting far-right, anti-European Union parties is part of a Russian strategy.
To divide European countries from each other, from their governments from each other, to spread division within the European Union, but also more broadly to divide Europe from the US. Having radical political forces potentially forming governments in major EU states is a major contribution towards that.
Last month, pro-Russian rebels held elections in parts of eastern Ukraine. Some Western observers did not think the elections were legitimate. But several parties in Europe accepted invitations to serve as election monitors, observing the voting. Neil Barnett called attention to the lists of election observers the Russians brought into Crimea and later into Donetsk and Luhansk. He said the lists contain a variety of European movements that openly sympathize with Russia. He says some may possibly be receiving financial support from Russia.
This is really an intelligence matter, and so payments that have been happening will have been happening generally covertly through third parties.
In Hungary, the Jobbik Party won 20% of the vote in elections last April. The party has called for special detention camps for the Roma people. It also has argued that Jews are a national security risk. Also present for the voting in eastern Ukraine were representatives of Italy's Forza Party, Bulgaria's Ataka, and the Communist Party in Greece. Relations between Russia and Europe are sharply deteriorating over Ukraine. Russia's finance minister says Western sanctions against Russia and falling oil prices would cost his country up to $140 billion a year. Nicholas Redman is with the International Institute of Strategic Studies. He says Russian President Vladimir Putin is using the economic pain to fuel public opinion against the West.
Anti-Americanism is something that's been given full rein. Some people who are in opposition now risk being classed as traitors. The society is in some senses on a kind of phony war footing. The political setup is now conditioned for several years of economic relative hardship.
I'm Mario Ritter.
You are listening to VOA, and we are coming to you from Washington. November 23rd marked the fifth anniversary of the killing of 58 people in the southern Philippines. Most were media workers. Philippine courts have yet to sentence anyone for the 2009 attacks. Many suspects remain free. Philippine and foreign journalists recently remembered the mass murder with another appeal for justice. Katie Weaver tells us more.
Mike Dobby is with the International Federation of Journalists. He has made trips to the southern Philippines for the past 5 years. He calls the Philippine justice system broken because of the high number of suspects who remain free.
There seem to be no substantial reasons for why these 84 suspects have not been rounded up and detained. We know the justice system is broken because at least 4 witnesses have been killed before they can give their evidence in this trial.
111 people have been charged in connection with the murders. 2 of the suspects turned state witness. That means they agreed to provide evidence to the prosecution. The main suspects belong to a powerful political family. Andal Ampatuan and his sons, Andal Jr. and Saldi, have each told the court they are not guilty of carrying out the attack. The wife and sisters of Maguindano governor, Esmail Mangu Dadatu, died in the violence. So did some of his supporters and 32 journalists. The family of Governor Mangu Dadatu was on its way to register for his candidacy papers at the time of the attack. His lawyers, supporters, and reporters were also with the group. Witnesses say more than 100 people blocked the group and began shooting at them. Andal Jr. was said to be leading the attack. The trial in this case began in early 2010. Lawyers from both sides have been pushing to speed up the case. Harry Roque, a lawyer working for the government, says he is happy there is a process that will move things up a little. He says the Supreme Court has permitted the presentation of evidence against some of the accused to finish before evidence against all of the suspects is in.
In that way, we can have partial promulgation of judgment against specific accused, and it is our aim to finish the evidence and to have promulgation of judgment against members of the Ampatuan family and against the shooters, the honor before 2016.
Lawyers for Saldi Ampatuan are currently presenting evidence to seek bail. That is money a defendant can pay for his release from jail while the court considers the case. Andal Jr.'s lawyers plan to seek bail next month. Justice Secretary Leila de Lima met with members of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines and the International Federation of Journalists last month. Jane Worthington is the Federation's acting director for Asia and the Pacific. She says the delegates learned that the government is making changes to prosecutions against people suspected of murdering journalists. However, she says, her organization will list the Philippines as one of the worst countries in the world in terms of its impunity situation. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thanks for listening. This is The Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Today, we tell you more about the effects of falling oil prices. Lower demand for oil and too much supply have sent prices to their lowest levels in 5 years. Last week, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries decided to keep production at current levels. Representatives of the 12-nation group met in Vienna, Austria. They were unable to reach agreement on changing OPEC's production targets. Lower oil prices are causing economic hardship in some OPEC members. Officials in some countries are exploring ways to cut government spending. The president of Venezuela announced last week that he and other government officials should take pay cuts as part of budget reductions. The Reuters News Service says the reductions are meant to answer the lower oil prices. It says Venezuela gets 96% of its export earnings from oil sales. The nation has among the highest inflation rates in Latin America. Russia is a major oil exporter, but does not belong to OPEC. This week, Russia's Economic Development Ministry predicted the Russian economy will shrink by 0.8% in 2015. Oil exports are important to Russia. The value of Russian money has lost about 40% of its value this year compared to the American dollar. Observers have blamed the drop on falling profits from oil exports and Western sanctions to punish Russian actions in Ukraine. But economists say the fall in oil prices is helping economies in Asia. Andrew Calhoun is with Hong Kong-based Fitch Ratings.
Most Asia-Pacific economies are oil importers, and therefore the decline in oil prices is kind of equivalent to a kind of income gain.
In a recent report, Fitch Ratings said China and most major Asian economies would effectively earn more money from sustained lower oil prices. Thailand spends 15% of national income on oil. Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia all are moving to reduce oil price supports, or subsidies, which are often a major part of government spending. Last month, Indonesian President Joko Widodo raised subsidized fuel prices by over 30%. Trade unions and opposition parties criticized the move. The Indonesian government says it is providing social assistance to over 15 million people to ease the effect of higher fuel costs. But some experts say it is a matter of time before prices recover. Jack Girard is president of the American Petroleum Institute. He says demand for oil will rise and prices will find an equilibrium. And that's the VOA Learning English Economics Report. I'm
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the show, Jonathan Evans tells us about a debate among Christians over Bible teachings. Some believe Bible passages about homosexuality are being interpreted incorrectly. Then we go to Anna Mateo, who tells us about some interesting findings in a very old serial murders case. And finally, we'll play some new music from the British boy band One Direction.
More than 30 American states now recognize marriages between two people of the same sex. An increasing number of mainline Christian groups are also accepting same-sex unions. But most evangelical Christians say the Bible condemns sexual relations among people of the same sex. They note writings found in the Bible's Book of Leviticus and the Book of Romans. Evangelicals firmly believe that Christianity's holy book is free from mistake. Now, a well-known student of evangelicalism is saying that the traditional reading of the Bible is wrong. The religious service looked like one at any evangelical church, except that same-sex couples were sitting in pews. A man rested his head on the shoulder of another man, and a woman had her arm around her female partner. They were among the several hundred people who recently gathered at the National City Christian Church in Washington, D.C. The attendees were a mix of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Christians. They were there for a meeting of the Reformation Project. The idea for the project came from a new way of thinking about the Bible. Matthew Vines formed the group after a testimonial he posted 2 years ago on YouTube went viral, became popular. The young man spoke in the video about being Christian and gay. Matthew Vines said that he did not choose to have an interest in men. He said the aim of the project is to show that there is a path to affirming the full authority of the Bible and affirming same-sex relationships. In the Christian Bible, Jesus' follower Paul condemns sexual acts between men. But Mr. Vines says loving gay relationships were nearly all unknown 2,000 years ago. He argues that a teaching that has failed and causes much suffering cannot be correct. But critics say he is just reading the Bible his own way to show that being gay is acceptable. One such critic is British evangelical clergyman Sam Albury. He recently spoke to the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. The group met in Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Albury said it is wrong to interpret the Bible to make it seem to accept same-sex relationships. Evangelical Christians accept many biblical scriptures literally. In other words, they believe most words of the Bible represent exact, precise truth. Southern Baptist leaders at that meeting softened some of their earlier statements about gay people. But they did not change beliefs that are central to their faith. Their actions led some people to compare the softened statements to Pope Francis's efforts to reach out to gays while not amending Roman Catholic ideology. David Gushy is an evangelical ethicist, someone who studies what is morally right and wrong. He noted that the Bible has 31,273 verses. David Gushy teaches at Mercer University, a Baptist religious school in Atlanta, Georgia. He recently published a book called Changing Our Mind. It caused a lot of discussion among evangelical Christians. He said his change of heart came partly from meeting gay people and from learning that his sister had declared herself to be a lesbian. I'm Jonathan Evans.
After more than a century, one of the world's most infamous killers is finally caught. Maybe. Perhaps. A British writer says he has uncovered the true identity of Jack the Ripper. The writer calls himself an armchair detective. For those who do not know about Jack the Ripper, he is one of history's most terrible serial killers, a person who kills again and again. Jack terrorized a poor part of London in the year 1888. Here are more details, or in this case, evidence. All you armchair detectives listening at home can play Sherlock Holmes and come to your own judgment. Few killers in history have become as well known as Jack the Ripper. His murders were rare in their violence, and for 126 years, police have been unable to put a name to the crimes. That is why it made international news recently when writer and armchair detective Russell Edwards named the man he says is Jack the Ripper. Mr. Edwards says new DNA evidence points the finger of guilt at one man, a Polish immigrant named Aaron Kosminski. Tests of DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, are often used today for identification purposes. Russell Edwards says experts used blood stains taken from a never-cleaned shawl or long scarf of Jack the Ripper's fourth victim. The victim is a woman named Catherine Eddowes. Her shawl reportedly was found by her body. These experts compared the DNA from this blood to that of a living descendant, a living relative of Aaron Kosminski. Mr. Edwards is not the only one to have suspected Mr. Kosminski. In 1888, London police also suspected him, but no witness stepped forward to give police the evidence they needed, so he walked free. Mr. Kosminski worked as a barber, a haircutter, in London. He surely knew how to use a sharp-edged blade. He died of gangrene from a leg wound in an insane asylum, a hospital for the mentally ill. But the killer named Jack the Ripper lives on. Stories about his notorious or infamous killings have appeared in many books, newspaper articles, and movies. The stories led Russell Edwards to investigate the murders. He decided to write about them after seeing a movie about the Ripper called From Hell. Johnny Depp and Heather Graham starred in the 2001 film. Jack the Ripper's murders took place in 1888 in an area of London's East End called Whitechapel. The known victims were five sex workers, but some believe he was responsible for many other killings in that area at that time. In 1888, Whitechapel was a poor part of town, where many traded sex for money. And that is who Jack the Ripper targeted. His victims were poor female prostitutes who drank too much. He murdered them violently, cutting their throats and cutting up their bodies. In most of the killings, he even removed internal organs. Everyone agrees that Jack the Ripper was a terrible man. But not everyone believes that Aaron Kosminski was really Jack the Ripper. Some other armchair detectives do not buy the accusation against Kosminski. They do not believe it. They say the DNA found on the shawl is not believable evidence. They say too much time has passed and too many hands have touched it. And Aaron Kosminski is no longer around to defend himself. But for at least one armchair detective, this mystery can finally be buried. I'm Anna Mateo.
It feels like we've been living in fast forward.
If you have a young daughter and you celebrate Christmas, there is a good chance that One Direction's latest album, 4, will be on your shopping list. The British boy band released the CD November 17th. Days later, it pushed Taylor Swift's album, 1989, out of the number one position on Billboard magazine's top 200 albums chart. One Direction has been there before. In fact, each of the band's 4 albums has gone to number 1 in the first week of release. Billboard magazine says One Direction is the only group in the history of the ratings chart to do that. Not true of all performers, however. Both singer Beyoncé and rapper DMX saw the same success with their first 5 albums. Last week, One Direction won the top prize, Artist of the Year, at the 2014 American Music Awards. They were also named Favorite Group, and their record, Midnight Memories, won the Favorite Pop Rock Album Award. One Direction performed at the awards ceremony in Los Angeles, but the song it performed was Night Changes, from the new album. We're only getting older, baby, and I've been thinking about it lately. Does it ever drive you crazy? Just how fast the night changes. 4 sold 387,000 copies in its first week. Steal My Girl was the first single from the collection. It came out in September. A humorous video was also released for Steal My Girl. The video was shot in the desert, and American actor Danny DeVito plays the video director. Chimpanzees and other wild animals also perform. Everybody wants to steal my girl. I'm Katie Weaver. Join us again next week for another Learning English American Mosaic on the Voice of America.